Welcome to the Wealth Stending Podcast. This is episode 64. It's December 23rd, 2014. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. Well, as you can probably tell by my voice, I am fighting off a cold and probably bronchitis, but I'm doing the best I can to keep my Christmas spirit up high as we roll in these final days before Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. I did want to record a brief podcast today just to give you an update on the markets and then also to talk about a subject which I've received a lot of questions on, which is job outlook, my thoughts on jobs. So we'll get to that in just a minute. Do want to remind you, if you're new to the podcast, go back and listen to the first 10 episodes. That's where I lay out the foundation of the 10 wealth building principles, which I attribute to helping me build not only my net worth, but more importantly, helping me attain personal freedom. Our motto here at the Wealth Stending Podcast is that money may not buy happiness, but it can buy freedom. And that's why in every episode, I try and teach you one or more lessons from the 10 wealth building principles. So in any given episode, we may be talking about stocks and bonds. We may be talking about investing. We could be talking about education. Whatever the specific topic we cover, though, it always relates back to your own personal lifestyle choices and how those choices that you make can affect your wealth and then ultimately your freedom. We're not here to blame the guy in the White House or the guy in Congress. Ultimately, what matters is what happens in your house. So let's take a quick look and see what's going on in the stock market today. As I record this episode, the markets are still open. They're doing quite well. We'll see how they end up closing. During a holiday week like this, there tends to be much less trading, and so prices can fluctuate an incredible amount in one day. So although we're up now, there's no telling how we'll close out the day in a couple hours. Having said that, I will say that the volatility today in the S&P 500 is quite tight. I would say this is one of the least volatile days we've seen in at least 2 weeks, and that's a good sign because over the last 2 weeks we have had some extreme, almost 3 weeks, we have had some extreme volatility. And those are turbulent times that, although a lot of money can be made, that's also a time when there's a great deal of risk. And in most cases, I prefer to get out of the market in those situations. As I mentioned in some recent previous episodes, we were looking for the market to get up above 2079.5. That's on the S&P 500. Well, it did break through that today. It has not broken through in significant volume, though. In fact, it's looking that it'll be much less than average volume. So it's hitting record highs on much lower trading volume, well below average. Now, that doesn't mean we totally discount them. Remember, when you don't argue with the scoreboard. When the market's up, the market's up. But I will give you an example. In yesterday, that's Monday's trade, the market closed at an all-time high. It had not closed up above that intraday trade high that I was looking at, the 2079, but it did close just short of that. It was at record close for the S&P 500. But since we are in the days leading up just before Christmas, there's not very much trading happening. So we were well below 10%, probably 11 or 12% below average volume. Now, again, that doesn't totally discount the fact that we're making new highs, but it does mean that less people are buying at these levels when you compare it to the average. That's something you do want to take into consideration. Ultimately, everything comes back to price and volume action. So again, today, while we see the S&P hitting new highs, we see the Dow Jones Industrial Average up above 18,000. All that's taking place with even less volume today than we saw yesterday. So we're probably looking at maybe a 15% decline in volume over the average. Just keep that in mind, something you want to watch. The other thing I'd point out that I think is driving the market is the thrust in consumer spending, the overall upbeat nature of the average consumer today. With lower gasoline prices, people are happy, they're spending more money, they're feeling more confident, they are getting more jobs. So that's driving the market. At the same time, we're seeing a rotation. We're seeing some of the more favored stocks with major declines. For example, biotech stocks, they're taking a real beating. Biogen right now, a very popular, widely traded biotech stock, down about 6% today. Probably over the last 2 days, it's been down, oh, I'd say 10%. Gilead, I never am sure how to pronounce that stock. I've heard it pronounced both ways. Right now, it's down about 4%. It's been down as much as, I think, 6% today over the last 2 days. I'd say it's been down probably a good 15, maybe 16, 17%. So that's taken a big hit. These have been some very high-flying stocks over the last couple years. So we are seeing that rotation. So depending upon where your money is invested, you may say, hey, if the market's making all-time highs, well, why am I losing money? Well, perhaps you've been in some of these leading stocks like the biotechs, and that's where we're seeing the rotation. And that's a key point I want to make here. There is always rotation in the stock market. Just because the market's going up, it doesn't mean your particular stocks may be going up. Likewise, just because the market's going down, it doesn't mean that the sector you're invested in is going down. Today, as I look over the markets, it looks like one main driver for the fact that the markets are holding up as well as they are is that oil stocks have been recovering, and the energy sector makes up a significant portion of the S&P 500. So, for example, ExxonMobil today up about a percent and a half right now. In the last 6 or 7 trading sessions, ExxonMobil has moved up about 10, maybe 11%. And that's a similar story with another leading oil stock, which would be Chevron. Chevron is telling the exact same story as ExxonMobil. It's up today about 1.7%. Over the last 6 or 7 trading sessions, it's up about 10%. Both of those stocks are components of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So when you have two key players like that that are up significantly over the last week or so, and that's, you know, 2 out of 30 stocks, you can see how that can have a big impact on an index like the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Now, right along with the energy stocks, some other sectors that are performing very well today and in the past few sessions have been basic materials. So these would be things like steel and rubber and plastics. The commodity-based products have taken a real hit lately. Well, people are thinking that we've hit a bottom and maybe these commodity prices are flattening now. The lower energy cost should help the overall production of basic materials. So things like basic materials, industrial type products, cyclical consumer goods, those are all getting a boost right now. As far as oil prices, West Texas Intermediate, it is up today about 2%. So we're seeing that hover right around the $56 a barrel mark. These are extremely, extremely low levels from what we saw just 6 months ago. So you can see how that's going to have a drastic impact on the stock market if these prices hold here or if they in fact even drop lower. And personally, I believe that the likelihood of oil prices dropping below this $55, $56 level are very realistic. Over the last 4 or 5 years, you know, certainly the hottest spot in the economy since the recession when it came to jobs was the energy sector. Many of the new jobs that have been created since 2008 came in states that are heavily dependent on not only energy, but specifically with the shale oil boom that's going on. So Texas, North Dakota, Pennsylvania to a lesser degree, those states have been up head and shoulders above all others when it came to jobs. And we're seeing the long term continue where jobs are just eroding in the Northeast. It's really the southern and the western states, and in recent months and years, really the western states, even more so than the southern states, that are growing their economies. That's where the new jobs are going. And so as I talk to people that are discouraged about their employment situation, I tell them they have to be flexible. The economy isn't collapsing, the economy isn't going to fall apart, but the particular sector that you're in, or maybe the particular town that you live in, that may be experiencing a depression, and that may not change anytime soon. So you have to be flexible not only in where you live, you also have to be flexible in the type of work that you're willing to do. You have to be willing to retrain. Sometimes, particularly if you're an older adult, you may have to take a step back in pay. And it may be something that you're never going to make up. If you get laid off and you're in your 50s or 60s, you've been in that same career path for 30 years, you're probably at your peak earning level. If you can't find another job in that industry, you may never get back to that level. That's a sad reality that we have to accept, and is not unique to the times we're in now. I've seen it happen in every decade. I saw it happen to the manufacturing and the steelworking type jobs in the 70s. I saw it happen with the energy jobs when the price of oil collapsed in the 80s. I saw it with white-collar worker, financial workers, a lot of tech workers in the 2000s. And then in the recession of 2008-2009, we saw it happen pretty much across the board to all occupation groups. Older workers in their, you know, again, 50s and 60s, if they were laid off, if they were not able to get back into that same type of career field, they were at a disadvantage and they were never going to get back to those peak earnings unless they really were aggressive and made a major change in their life. I'm not saying it's impossible to get back to that level or to reinvent yourself. I'm not saying that at all. In fact, I don't want to discourage anybody. But you do have to be willing to make a change. It is definitely a transition. And again, it may involve not only geography, but it will probably also involve you retraining in some other type of skill level. As an older worker, you have maturity, you have wisdom, you have reliability, you have all those things going for you. You probably have leadership skills, but you may have to tweak your technical knowledge or get up to speed in some other area of innovation. The good news is that in, you know, 6 months, 12 months, you can make that happen. You can make that transition work if you're willing to work for it. And the good news too is that if this applies to older workers, it can definitely apply to those of you that are young. Don't believe all the gloom and doom you hear. People throughout history are always pessimistic. They always think the times they're living in are the worst, and that's not the case. Remember, when I talked about wealth and freedom at the beginning of this podcast, I mentioned that it was largely based on your lifestyle, right? It's your personal decisions. It's those decisions that you make more so than the environment around you. It's going to determine what kind of job you have, how successful you're going to be in your career field, and then ultimately what types of wealth you're going to be able to build, and then how you put that wealth towards your personal freedom. Just because you have money doesn't mean you're free. Look at all the celebrities, the athletes that are miserable. Look at the people that win tens of millions of dollars in the lottery, and within a year or so, they're broke and they're miserable again. It isn't the money that ultimately determines your freedom and your happiness. It's what you do with it. It's how you apply it. But I'm starting to digress. Let's go back to the job market. So if you're a young person, or even if you're an old person, you're trying to get into a new industry, let me just give you one example. And the example I'm going to give is specific to where I live, because that's where I live and that's where I talk to people. So I know what's going on in my local market. And I know some of you will be naysayers and you'll say, well, that's not happening where I live, or, you know, I'm in a depressed big city in Detroit, or I'm in a rural area in southern Georgia or whatever. And that may be the case, and there may not be opportunity there. Like I mentioned, you may have to move geographically. But the state I'm in, the state of Utah, has held up extremely well throughout the recession. It's still going gangbusters. Our neighbor states are doing well as well. Colorado, Idaho, Wyoming, Arizona, all doing very well. You know, Arizona, Nevada, they took a hit during the recession, but they are recovering. I know Arizona in particular. The last statistics I saw on Arizona was that for 2014, they were in the top 10 or top 15 states for job growth. So they're definitely recovering. Of course, going more south from here, Texas doing very well, Oklahoma doing well. Getting into the southern states like Florida and Georgia, they've all done very well this year. They're projected to keep doing well into 2015. So it is very much geographically dependent. But again, let me give an example. And I want to talk about an entry-level job that I've recently heard about. And I'm talking about an entry-level job because I want to show you how this can apply to all of you. Again, whether you're a young worker that's just trying to break your way into a career field, or even whether you're an older worker that's willing to take a step back and try and get into a new industry. So there's a company here in Utah, in Provo, Utah. It's called Bluehost. You may be familiar with them. They're an internet website provider. They're one of the companies that are just doing extremely well, and they're not alone. There are many companies and industries within the area that I live, which would be Salt Lake County and Utah County. That's the area is pretty much between Ogden, Utah, north of Salt Lake City, down into Provo, which is south of Salt Lake City, about, 50, 60 miles. So that region, that corridor along the Wasatch Front, the job market here has held up extremely well through the recession, and they're going gangbusters now. So I just want to give you one example of an entry-level job. Now, again, right away, some of you naysayers will be saying, well, you know, I'm older, I don't know about computers, or you may be saying, well, I'm young and I don't have a computer degree. Well, this is an entry-level job. It's with a company that provides internet hosting services, but it is truly entry-level. They're having an explosion in growth, and they're just looking for employees. If you speak English, if you have manners and you're polite, if you're willing to learn, and if you'll show up and work 40 hours a week, they pretty much have a job for you. Now, this is entry-level. So you're not going to be making $50,000 a year, but at the same time, it's not minimum wage. You don't have to have a degree. In fact, I don't even think you have to have a high school diploma. Again, they're really just looking for good workers, someone that's willing to come to work that can speak in English. This is a phone job. It does require talking on the phone. So you have to be able to speak English, and you have to be willing to show up and work. You have to be dependable. They don't care if you're 18 or if you're 58. It's not a hard environment to work in. It's a high-tech environment. You're going to be talking on the telephone. So as you can imagine, it's air conditioned, right? It's cool in the summer and warm in the winter. You'll sit in a nice cozy chair. There's no heavy lifting. This would be a job that even people with, you know, certain disabilities that they could do, because you're basically sitting in front of a computer. And no, this isn't a telemarketing job. It's a tech service type job where you are taking in inbound phone calls where people are calling up needing either customer service assistance or technical assistance. Now again, this is entry level. So even if you don't know anything about customer service, or even if you don't know anything about tech, they'll bring you in, they'll assess your skills, they'll put you where you can function appropriately, and then if you're willing to learn, you'll be able to move up into jobs that require more skill, and likewise, you'll be paid accordingly. So to come in at the entry level, they're paying $13 an hour. Now again, I know that's not where you're going to be able to live a lifestyle of the rich and famous, but $13 an hour, that's almost $30,000 a year. I think it works out to $27,000 a year. That's with no education. That's just walking in off the street. They will train you. If you have skills beyond entry level, then you can probably qualify for a higher level position, and accordingly, you get more dollars per hour. The people that I was talking to that work there, they were rapidly getting promoted again because this is a growing company and a growing industry. They need people. They're promoting from within. People within 6 months or 12 months, they're moving from $13 an hour, you know, up to $17 or more an hour. That starts putting you in the $35,000 range. Even at that entry level position, if you do qualify where you can go into like a selling type position, you can get a bonus. And those people are making their base of around, you know, the $27,000 with their commissions. They are making $30,000 and $35,000. So that if you want to go the sales route, that's there for you. You'll get paid more. And as I mentioned, they are training from within. They are promoting from within. If you come there and you don't have a computer science degree or you can't do tech support or something, if you're willing to learn and you'll start out at an entry level, they will train you. They will allow you to move up the ladder. Let me tell you how desperately they're looking for employees. If you're an employee there and you can help them recruit someone at an entry level job, they'll pay you a $500 bonus. If you're an employee there and you can help them recruit someone at a higher level, say someone at a technical level, and I don't know exactly what the levels go up to, but, you know, for example, someone that maybe is a computer engineer, a computer scientist, a senior programmer, or something like that, if you can help them recruit someone that can perform at those higher levels, the recruiting bonus they'll pay you as an employee is $2,500. That's a huge bonus. So think about that. If you work at Bluehost and you have a network of people where you know people at the low end, at the entry level, and you also know people that you can recruit that have higher skills, you can make anywhere from $500 to $2,500 bonus just for referring those people and then having those people obviously get hired by the company. And I know you probably have to stay there 3 months or 6 months or something. I don't know what the retention rate needs to be, but I just want to give you that as an example. That's just one company that I know of where I've talked to their employees. I know they're motivated. I know they're happy. And I know they're out there trying to recruit people so that they can get these bonuses. It's a great opportunity. Now, again, I know there's naysayers out there because I get the negative emails. I get the people saying, yeah, but... or it doesn't work for me, or whatever. Okay, yeah, right. So you would have to move to Provo, Utah. I get that. But what I want to stress here is, even if you don't have any computer skills, this could help get you into that industry. So if you're in a lower tech industry, this is an opportunity to get in and to get training on the job and to get, you know, you're getting paid for it. You're starting out at almost $30,000 a year just to show up for 40 hours a week. It comes with benefits. You're working in a nice environment. That would put you into a new industry that you're not in now. If you want to move in that direction, then you have to first take that step. Once you get into that position, then it's up to you. Are you willing to learn the high-tech aspects of it so you can move up and move more into troubleshooting and maybe programming or something? One thing you have to understand about the high-tech industry, about computer science, computer engineering in particular, you don't have to have a degree. No, it doesn't hurt. And if you're young and you're interested in that, I would encourage you to go get a degree in computer science or computer engineering. But in any growth field, in an industry that's actually growing, in an industry that you're going to want to be in, they don't hire and pay based on credentials or pedigrees. What they pay for is performance. And that's exactly the kind of company and that's exactly the kind of industry you want to work in. So if you want to break into that field, you may have to start at entry level. But if you're willing to work and study and learn, for example, programming, if you're a great programmer, if you know internet security, if you can network the systems mechanically, you know, connecting the cables, if you have that ability, they don't care if you have the degree. They just care if you can do it. Now, again, I'm not arguing the point that it's much easier to get the job if you do have the degree, but the bottom line is, in this field, if you're going to be hired as a programmer, if you can show someone that you can program, if you have a portfolio where you can demonstrate that this is what I can do, then they don't care if you have formal education. That's the sign of a growth industry, and that's the kind of industry you want to always migrate towards. So let's look at this Bluehost job. Let's even say that you're 45 years old, you have no computer experience, you have nothing high-tech about you, but you've been laid off or fired and you need to transition to a new company, a new career. Let's just say you went to work there and you took this entry-level position, $27,000 a year, and you start out on their inbound phone service where you're just answering their basic questions, and then when you can't solve their problem, whether it be customer service or a technical issue, then you escalate it up to the next level. So let's say you're willing to take that position, but you're aggressive and you want more, but you're not high-tech oriented. Could you have a career at this company? Could you make something of yourself? Could you transition into another field? Well, I think you could. And let me just give you one example. So you're this person in your mid-40s. It doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman. You get this job. You show up. You go to training. You come to work on time. You're polite. You communicate properly. You show them that you're a good, enthusiastic employee. After you've worked there 6 months, a year, whatever, you heard me mention about this as a growing company. They need qualified employees. Well, while you're there, you can start helping recruit people, right? They'll pay you $500 if you can get someone in that does those same entry-level skills as you. They'll pay you up to $2,500 if you can bring someone in at a more senior talented level. Well, maybe you do a couple of those. So you add to your income for the year, but more importantly, you start honing your skills maybe as a recruiter. You don't have to stay in that entry-level position. You're not interested in the high-tech part of it, so you don't want to learn the programming or the troubleshooting, but maybe you see a human resource angle for you. Do you see how this works? You're going into a company that's growing and they have a need. Now, maybe you don't have any human resource experience. Maybe you don't have a degree in that. But if you can display to this company that you interact well with people, that you have the ability to go out and recruit and bring in and retain employees, and they're going to be able to see that because they're paying you bonuses for bringing in these new employees, they're going to see that you have a knack for that. And again, this is a company that trains and promotes from within. So I can see a scenario where you would move up from that entry level into maybe a more of an entry level in human resources, and then from there maybe even being a recruiter, doing that full time. A recruiter can be a very lucrative position. And you can go from that $27,000 salary up to, who knows, the sky's the limit, $50,000, $100,000. So within a year, maybe a year and a half's time frame, you've come in as an entry-level employee, you've come into a new industry, you've gravitated to the human resource side of it, you're building your reputation, you're building your portfolio of what you can do as a human resource recruiter, and then you don't even have to stay with this company if you don't want to. After a couple years of doing that, if you think you can make more money on your own or at another company, or you want to live in a different geographic area, you can move from there as someone that's a demonstrated rainmaker of a human resource recruiter in a high-tech field. That's a very valuable skill, very high-paid, very lucrative in today's market. You can go from zero to that career, I'd say, in about 18 months if you put your mind to it. Okay, I know that's just one example, but there you have it. The point I want to make is it's up to you. Look for the opportunities. If they're not where you live, then move somewhere where they are, because the opportunities are around, they are happening. Don't be all gloom and doomy. Go out and make it happen. And I'll end today's podcast on that note. As always, if you have questions, concerns, you want to get me some information, you can reach me at our website, which is wealthsteading.com. Until next time, and as always, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.